It was a little late in the morning before the wagons rolled out. The sun was already up, but it was still an orange ball low on the horizon. Preacher had saddled up horse, and now he rode 50 to 100 yards in front of the lead wagon, with Dog trotting along beside him. The terrain along the river was just as easy as it had been the first day out of St. Louis. The wagon's course wasn't quite as straight as it had been the first day, because now they were following the bends of the broad, muddy stream. Preacher could have led the party over some shortcuts, but he didn't see any real need to do so. During one of the times when they stopped to rest the teams and let the oxen graze, Jerome took a new flintlock rifle from one of the wagons and handed it to Jake, along with a powder horn and a shot pouch. Jake accepted the weapon with a glowing smile on his round face.
Are you sure that's a good idea, giving the kid a gun? He's liable to blow his own foot off or even shoot one of us.
That's why he has to prove to me that he can handle a weapon safely. Preacher, can you show him how to shoot it?
I already know how to shoot.
Let's see you load that rifle then. Because he was short, Jake had a little trouble with the rifle's long barrel, an equally long ramrod. But he was able to pour powder from the horn down the barrel, wrap a patch around a heavy lead ball from the shot patch, and shove the ball home with the ramrod, seating it firmly on the powder charge. Then he pulled back the hammer and put a pinch of powder in the pan.
All right. It's charged and primed and ready to shoot, so don't point it at nobody. See that rock out yonder? See if you can hit it.
I can hit it.
The weapon was heavy, and the barrel weaved from side to side as Jake placed his cheek against the smooth wood of the stock and tried to sight in on the rock that was serving as his target. He took a deep breath, and the barrel steadied. Jake had hit the target on his first shot.
All right, I'm convinced. You can keep the rifle, Jake.
Thanks, Mr. Hart.
Well, maybe he won't shoot anybody else, if we're lucky.
After several days of travel, the Missouri River curved to the northwest, then took a more westerly turn. The members of the party had fallen into a routine by now. The weather had cooperated, and each day the wagons were able to cover a good stretch of ground. As the miles rolled away behind them, the nagging feeling that something was wrong continued to plague Preacher from time to time, even though he had still seen no evidence of trouble. Thinking that someone might be following him, he doubled back on the trail one day, riding more than a mile in the direction they had come from. His keen eyes searched the horizon and narrowed in suspicion as they spotted a faint haze of dust in the air. Some more wagons, or a good number of riders, back there several miles behind the wagon train. It didn't have to mean anything. Dust could have come from a hunting party of Indians, or some immigrant wagons, or even a troop of army dragoons on patrol. But he was going to keep a close eye on the wagon train's back trail from now on. If the followers came too close, he would have Jerome and Corliss and the other men circle the wagons. Anybody who tried to raid this wagon train would get a hot lead welcome. Preacher would see to that. Skyler hadn't had any trouble following the trail so far. The wagons were so loaded down with cargo that their wheels cut deep ruts in the dirt. Not only that, but it had quickly become obvious that they were following the river.
We can get ahead of them anytime we want.
Fairfax and Skyler were gathered now with Beaumont's men around a tiny fire that had been built down in a depression so that its glow wouldn't be visible to the people they were stalking. There was no sense in warning Preacher that somebody was back here.
We don't want to get ahead of them, not for a long time yet.
Yeah, I know. I was just saying in case you changed your mind.
I haven't. We're sticking to my original plan. I want to at least be in sight of the mountains before we strike. It might even be better to circle around the wagons and wait for them in the foothills.
That means we'll be following them for a month or more.
Yes, but we brought plenty of supplies with us.
It's more time we take a chance of Preacher figuring out that we're following the wagons.
We'll be careful.
The wagon train reached Westport and laid over there for a day to give the livestock a chance to rest up after the haul from St. Louis. Preacher explained to Corliss and Jerome that they would make several more stops like that during the journey. It was better to spend an occasional day resting than to have the oxen start to break down. Westport wasn't very big, but there were a couple of well-stocked stores. This was the jumping-off point for the trading caravans that headed down to Santa Fe, so a lot of wagon traffic passed through here. Westport was also the last place men could stock up on whiskey and enjoy little female companionship. The Hart's drivers all wanted to visit the local saloons and whorehouses. Preacher told them to go ahead. He'd stay and watch over the wagons along with Jake. As for Corliss and Jerome, Preacher didn't know if they were interested in drinking and whoring or not. Corliss was engaged to Deborah Morgan, of course, but that didn't stop some men from carrying on with other women while they were far away from their betrothed. Corliss climbed into his wagon to sleep, though, and Jerome joined Preacher and Jake.
This is really it, isn't it? The edge of civilization.
Yep. From here on, it's all frontier.
This seemed like such a good idea back in Chicago. It was going to make us rich men. Now I'm not so sure we should have come out here. There are so many dangers.
You plan on getting up tomorrow morning?
Getting up? Of course I plan on getting up.
Well, then you're already running a hell of a risk, because you don't know you'll still be alive in the morning. You don't even know if the sun will rise or goeth down in the evening, like it says in the good book.
In Ecclesiastes, also known as the Book of the Preacher.
Well, smart fellow, old Ecclesiastes.
I take your point, Preacher. We take it on faith that the earth abideth forever. So we might as well have faith that our efforts will be rewarded, too.
Grown-ups sure do like to talk a lot. I think I'm going to turn in.
Good night, Jake.
After Jake left, Jerome stayed for a while and chatted with Preacher. Then, after a half hour or so, Jerome went to his wagon to sleep, too, leaving Preacher alone. Which Preacher didn't mind at all. He had always been a solitary sort of fella. Happy when he was around other people, but happy with his own company, too. Preacher was sitting on the ground with his back leaned against a wagon wheel when he saw someone climb stealthily out of the other vehicles. That wagon was the one Pete Carey drove. And Carey was off carousing in the taverns and brothels of Westport. Jake, Jerome, and Corliss were all asleep in other wagons, or at least they were supposed to be. The mysterious figure who had just emerged from Carey's wagon was too tall to be Jake anyway. He wasn't big enough to be Corliss Hart. That left Jerome. The Preacher had watched with his own eyes as Jerome climbed into the lead wagon a short time earlier. He supposed Jerome could have slipped out the other side of the vehicle, snuck over to Carey's wagon, and crawled inside, but for the life of him, Preacher couldn't think of any reason Jerome would do a thing like that. Preacher came to his feet as the shadowy figure moved away from the wagon. The starlight revealed that whoever it was wore the same sort of rough work clothes as the Teamsters, as well as a dark felt hat with a large round brim. Without making a sound, Preacher followed the figure as it went to one of the other wagons and stopped beside a water barrel lashed to the side of the vehicle. The intruder took something that had been slung around his neck on a strap and held it to the barrel. A water skin, Preacher figured. That son of a bitch was stealing water.
Don't move or I'll blow holes in you.
It took a lot to throw Preacher for a loop, but he was well and truly surprised as he stood there looking down at the woman who had fainted. The broad-brimmed hat had fallen off her head when she had collapsed, and the thick dark hair that had been tucked up inside it had spilled out.
Son of a bitch.
Preacher realized he still had his thumbs looped over the hammers of his pistols. He uncocked them and lowered the guns with care, then tucked the weapons behind his belt again. Dropping to a knee beside the woman, he put a hand on her shoulder.
Wake up, Miss Morgan. Come on. Best wake up now.
Preacher clamped his other hand over her mouth, abruptly silencing the sound. Deborah tried to struggle against him, but his firm grip on her shoulder pinned her to the ground.
Settle down, blasted. I ain't gonna hurt you. I just don't want you raising a big ruckus before I find out what in the blazes is going on here. Now, if I take my hand away from your mouth, are you gonna scream or do anything foolish like that?
Deborah shook her head.
All right. I'm gonna take your word for it.
Will you help me up?
Preacher got to his feet, grasped her hands, and lifted her with ease.
I suppose you wonder what I'm doing here.
No. You're showing Corliss Hart that just because you're engaged to marry him, that don't mean he can tell you what to do. And he sure can't forbid you from doing something you want to do.
Well, that's not all of it, of course. I really don't want to be separated from him for a year or more.
So you figured you'd just come along no matter what anybody said. You've been hiding in Pete Carey's wagon all along ever since we left St. Louis and sneaking out at night to get some air. Maybe some food and water, huh?
There's food in the wagon. I brought my own supplies. And I have a water skin with me, and I've been making it last. But tonight I drank the last of the water and had to refill it. I thought everyone was asleep. I overheard you earlier telling Corliss and Jerome that it wouldn't be necessary to post any guards tonight. So I thought it would be safe to come out and stretch my legs for a while.
What I want to know is how you managed to hide from Carey. Oh, hell, you didn't hide from Carey, did you? He's known all along you were riding in his wagon. He must have.
He knew. But please don't be angry with him. I begged him to help me.
Come on.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to let the fellow who's going to be your husband decide what in blazes to do with you.
No! You can't tell Corliss.
Well, now, he had to find out sooner or later, didn't he?
Yes, but we're still too close to St. Louis. He's liable to send me back.
Don't make me drag you over there, ma'am.
You wouldn't dare.
I reckon it'd be better if we didn't find out what I'll dare and what I don't.
Oh, all right. I suppose I might as well face up to this.
Always best to meet trouble head on.
They crossed to the other side of the circle, where Corliss's wagon was. Preacher rapped his knuckles against the sideboards.
Hart, wake up.
A moment later, Corliss stuck his head out through the canvas flaps at the rear of the wagon. He leaned over the tailgate.
Preacher? Well, what the hell's going on? Is there trouble? Who's that with you? It looks like... My God! Deborah!
Corliss scrambled over the tailgate and dropped to the ground.
What in heaven's name are you doing here? Why are you dressed like that?
Please, Corliss...
What's going on out there? Corliss, Preacher, what's wrong?
You better get out of here, Jerome. We've got a problem.
Miss Morrigan?
My goodness, you all act like you've never seen a woman before.
I certainly didn't expect to see you here, Miss Morrigan. How in the world did you get here?
She's been traveling with us all along ever since we left St. Louis, hiding out in Pete Carey's wagon.
Carey? I'll thrash him!
You'll do nothing of the sort. He's been very helpful to me, and he's conducted himself like a perfect gentleman. You have no reason to be angry with him.
Other than the fact that he knew you weren't supposed to be here, and yet he brought you along anyway and helped you hide from the rest of us.
Now, don't worry about Carey right now. What are you going to do about the lady here?
Send her back to St. Louis, of course. The frontier is no place for a woman. You said so yourself, Preacher.
Now, just how do we go about doing that?
Doing what?
Sending Miss Morgan back to St. Louis.
Well, we just... I suppose we could... Surely there must be some way...
Wait just a moment. We don't have any extra men. Everyone except Preacher is needed to drive the wagon. And we have to rely on Preacher to scout out our route and guide us.
Uh-huh, that's right. You can't spare a man to go back with Miss Morgan, and you sure can't make her start out across Missouri on her own.
Maybe we can hire somebody here in Westport to accompany her.
You'd trust one of these frontiersmen to escort your fiancé all the way back to St. Louis?
I won't go.
No, I suppose that won't be a very good idea. Maybe she could stay here in Westport instead of waiting for me in St. Louis.
Westport may be a settlement, but it's still a mighty rough place. No place for a gal by herself unless she's planning on going to work in one of the houses.
I beg your pardon. How dare you make such an insinuation?
I ain't insinuating a damn thing. I'm just saying it wouldn't be a good idea to leave you here by yourself for the next year or so.
We have no choice. We'll all just have to turn around and take the wagon train back to St. Louis. Then we can start west again.
But that means we'll have wasted 2 weeks.
Do you have a better idea?
Take her with us.
Take her with us? Preacher, have you gone mad? We all agreed back in St. Louis that the frontier was no place for a woman, especially not for one as pampered and helpless as Deborah.
I can take care of myself. Haven't I proven it by making it this far without being discovered?
You've been discovered now, and that changes everything.
Well, I ain't so sure about that. Think about it for a spell. Miss Morgan spent nearly a week riding in that wagon, hiding out so that we didn't find out about her, and that couldn't have been easy.
I should say it wasn't easy. I made myself a hiding place in the middle of the cargo, stacking the crates around me so that no one could see me. It was cramped and hot and miserable. Delicacy forbids me from telling you just how miserable it was at times. but I persevered.
Just because you're stubborn doesn't mean it's all right for you to go to the mountains with us.
Sometimes pure mule-headedness is the only thing that keeps folks alive out on the frontier.
I don't understand you, Preacher. You were dead set against Miss Morrigan coming along with us, and now you seem to think it's a good idea.
Now, whoa, don't get me wrong. It'd be a whole heap better if the lady was back yonder in St. Louis where she's supposed to be. But if we can't leave her here and we can't send her back, maybe letting her come would be a better idea than turning the whole damn wagon train around.
That's our decision to make, not yours. I don't want to put her life in danger.
Why, Jerome, how sweet of you.
He's not sweet, he's a fool. Every week we delay gives someone else a chance to get to the mountains before us and establish a trading post in the same location we want.
You'd put business over your own fiancé's life.
I didn't say that. You've got me all half crazy here. I don't know what to do.
Let me come with you.
Well, it might work out. If Preacher thinks that might be best.
I suppose we could give it a try.
There won't be any giving it a try. Miss Morgan either comes along or she stays here and takes her chances. Once we get farther west, there sure won't be any turning back.
I still have reservations, but if you think that's what we should do, Preacher, and if Corliss agrees, then I say we let Miss Morgan accompany us.
All right, fine. She can come.
You could at least act like you're happy to see me.
I could, but I'd really rather you were back in St. Louis.
Oh!
You can continue sleeping in Carrie's wagon, but we'll rearrange the cargo and make a better place for you since you don't have to hide anymore.
Thank you, Jerome. I know you don't really want me here either, but at least you're considerate.
Deborah and the cousins walked off toward Pete Carrie's wagon. Preacher and Jake watched them go.
This is just the start of more trouble, ain't it?
More than likely, Jake. More than likely.
Now that Deborah's presence was no longer a secret, she rode openly on the seat of the second wagon the next day, next to Corliss. The Missouri River took a sharp northwestward turn, but as the wagon train rolled out of Westport, Preacher led him almost due west again, along the southern bank of a stream he told the others was known as the Kansas River. Kansas, which flowed into the Missouri, was smaller than the Big Muddy.
We'll follow this little ways and cross it at a good ford I know and head north to the Platte. That'll lead us the rest of the way to the South Pass.
And that's where we'll set up our trading post.
Well, that's up to you, of course. I'm no storekeeper, so it don't matter none to me. But it's a good place. If the immigrant wagons really do start rolling to the Oregon country like folks say they will before long, they'll have to travel right through here. Time to get that far, they'll need to stock up on supplies, too. Now, there's a trading post at Fort Laramie, but it's a mighty long haul from there over the mountains to Fort Hall. Your place would be smack dab in the middle of that stretch.
That night, Deborah joined the men around the fire. She was a pretty woman, so naturally the men were interested in her. Even though the two teamsters were trying to be careful, Corliss noticed the way they were looking at Deborah. The admiration in their eyes went past being frank and ended up bordering on outright lust.
All right, Deborah, go get in the wagon.
What? Why should I do that, Corliss?
Because I don't like the way these two are staring at you.
We're not looking at anybody. We didn't mean any offense.
Well, you've offended Miss Morgan.
No, they haven't, Corliss. I'm fine.
Don't argue with me. You didn't see the way they were staring.
Keep your seat, ma'am. Lars and I will go over to the other side of the wagons. Come on, Lars.
Nielsen stood up.
You're not going anywhere until you've apologized to Miss Morrigan.
Really, Corliss, that's not necessary. Even if Mr. Robinson and Mr. Nielsen were looking at me, I'm not insulted or offended. There's no need for an apology.
And I say there is.
Sorry.
Not good enough. You didn't mean it.
I said I was sorry. That's all I'm saying.
If you care about your job...
That's enough, Corliss. Gil apologized and Deborah's not upset. Now stop aggravating the situation.
Oh, it's Deborah now, is it? Are you going to get too familiar with her now too, Jerome?
Oh, stop being so blasted touchy. There's no need for this.
On the other side of the fire, Jake glanced up at Preacher.
Is there gonna be a fight?
Don't know. As long as they don't kill each other and can still handle those oxen in the morning, ain't any of my business.
Come on, Lars. I ain't hungry no more.
Damn it, I'm not through with you.
Well, I'm just about through with you.
Corliss reeled and was about to fall over into the fire when Jerome leaped up and caught him.
For God's sake, Corliss, what do you think you're doing?
Fighting for the honor of the woman I love?
City bred or not, Corliss' heart was no weak one, and clearly he knew something about fighting. But before he could continue the battle with Robinson, he was grabbed from behind by Nielsen. The big Swede lifted Corliss into the air. Corliss flailed, but to no avail. Nielsen got his brawny arms around him in a bear hug.
I got him, Gil!
Hang on to him, Lars!
Robinson pushed himself to his feet and closed in on Corliss, who was held helpless in Nielsen's arms. With a savage look on his face, he intended to give Corliss a beating while Nielsen held him. Jerome threw a wild-eyed look at Preacher.
Aren't you going to do something?
Ain't my fight.
It was about that time that Deborah decided to take matters into her own hands. She ran up behind Nielsen and started pounding her small fist against his back.
Let go of him, you brute!
Help him steal!
Corliss stopped struggling as he turned gray in the firelight.
By God, that's enough! Deborah, get out of the way!
Jerome charged across the intervening ground, leaped into the air, and landed on Nielsen's back. Jerome wrapped his legs around the Swede's waist and one arm around his neck. With his other hand, he started hammering punches against the side of Nielsen's head. Nielsen let go of Corliss to reach up and swat and claw Jerome, who was viciously twisting his ear by this time. Nielsen got hold of the smaller man's shirt. The muscles in his arms and shoulders bunched as he hauled upward and bent forward. Meanwhile, Corliss rushed Robinson. Robinson went down under a hail of punches. Nielsen rushed at Corliss's back, his sledgehammer fists raised. But he had to charge right past Jerome, who grabbed hold of one of the Swede's legs.
Let me go!
Nielsen tried to kick himself free of Jerome's grip. The distraction gave Corliss enough time to reach into the back of one of the wagons and grab an axe handle from a stack of them bound for the trading post. He went for Nielsen. Jerome clambered upright.
Holy cow! Mr. Hart and Mr. Hart won!
Preacher hadn't really expected that outcome, but he was glad to see that things had worked out that way. He looked over at Pete Carey and Blackie.
You boys got any stake in this fight?
Hell no.
Deborah hurried over to Corliss.
Oh my God! Are you all right, Corliss?
I'm fine. Thanks for giving me a hand, Jerome.
I couldn't let them gang up on you like that. It wasn't fair.
Yeah, but you're no fighter. You're lucky they didn't kill you.
I guess I'm tougher than you thought I was.
Before you boys go to congratulating yourselves too much, you best remember that you still need Robinson and Nielsen to drive a couple of those wagons.
Yes, you're right. We need to mend some fences now.
Jerome stepped over to the now reviving Nielsen.
That was a good fight, Lars. Let me help you up.
Nielsen blinked and stared at Jerome's hand for a second before a grin appeared on his face.
Yeah. Good fight.
No hard feelings, Gil?
No, I reckon not.
But you'll have to treat Miss Morgan with respect from now on. Keep a civil tongue in your head and don't stare at her.
Sure. I'm mighty sorry, ma'am.
That's all right. I accept your apology. Now, why don't we all sit down and continue our supper?
As it turned out, the next day went quite well. The wagons forded the Kansas River without a hitch and angled northwestward, soon picking up an even smaller stream that was a tributary of the Kansas. They would follow that almost all the way to the Platte. Well, one day turned into the next. Miles continued to unspool beneath the wagon. Gil Robinson and Lars Nielsen were a little sullen for a few days, but they got over it. The Swede was soon his usual smiling self again. And as for Robinson, well, hell, he'd never been that friendly even before the fight with Corliss. But he handled his team well enough and pitched in around the camps as much as he ever had. One day, while the wagon train was stopped at noon, Deborah decided that she wanted to learn how to shoot a rifle.
Well, now, that ain't a bad idea. We're already a long way from civilization and getting farther away every day. Might come a time when Miss Morgan knowing how to handle a rifle would come in mighty handy.
All right, if you both insist.
Corliss got his flintlock from the wagon and brought it over to Deborah. He thrust the weapon at her.
Oh my, do I really have to lift it all the way to my shoulder?
You do if you want to shoot it. That's the only way to aim. Few fellows can shoot a rifle from the hip, but I don't advise it. Especially for you, ma'am. Might break a wrist that way.
All right.
Deborah struggled to raise the rifle. When she had it in place, with the butt firmly socketed against her shoulder, the barrel weaved even worse than when Jake was trying to shoot one of the long rifles.
Now what do I do?
Well, point the barrel at that little clump of sagebrush out there.
What sagebrush?
Yonder.
Oh, I see it now.
Deborah managed to aim the rifle in the general direction of the sagebrush.
Now reach up with the thumb of your right hand. Use it to pull the hammer back.
The hammer?
That part right there.
Biting her lip in concentration as the men gathered to watch this display of her shooting ability, Deborah got her thumb on the hammer and eared it back.
Oh. Is it ready to shoot?
It's ready. You got the sights on that sagebrush?
I'm trying, but this gun is awfully heavy. Do I pull the trigger now?
Oh, now, take a deep breath first and steady yourself. Then squeeze the trigger. Don't jerk it. That'll just throw your aim off.
Deborah fell, landing hard on her rump, and the rifle hit the ground in front of her.
Good Lord. I hope you didn't damage the rifle.
The rifle? What about me?
Jerome took her arm and helped her up while Corliss examined the rifle to make sure it was undamaged.
You didn't hold the rifle tight enough against your shoulder. That's why it kicked so hard. That powder's got a heavy recoil to start with, but you just made it worse.
Why didn't you warn me?
Well, you'll remember what to do next time, won't you?
I suppose so. Still, I think it was a mean trick.
You'll get used to shooting. I sure did.
Corliss showed Deborah how to reload the rifle, and she tried another shot. This time she came closer to the sagebrush, which she hadn't hit at all with her first shot. The ball kicked up dirt about 10 feet in front of the brush.
That's enough. My shoulder is going to be so bruised tomorrow.
It'll heal.
One morning, after they'd been following the south bank of the Platte for several days, Preacher didn't like the looks of the sky up ahead. It was a flat, silvery color, and the air had an ominous heaviness to it that lay hot and still over the prairie. Even greenhorns like Corliss and Jerome sensed that something was wrong.
What is it, Preacher?
Storm coming.
So it rains a little. I think we can handle that.
Some mighty bad storms boil up sometimes out here on the plains. Rain so hard you can't see your hand in front of your face. Lightning that seems to set the air on fire around you. And twisters that can pick up a wagon and fling it a mile through the air.
Surely you're exaggerating.
I don't think he is.
Should we try to take shelter somewhere?
If a storm comes along, there ain't no place to hide. We'll just have to ride it out as best we can.
So you think we should push on?
No point in sitting and waiting. Might as well get moving. Could be the storm will go around us.
The oppressiveness in the air grew worse as the morning wore on. Temperature climbed. It was a sultry heat that stole a man's breath away and made him long for shade and cool breeze, neither of which he was able to find out here on the prairie. But the storm didn't break. It just continued to threaten during the afternoon.
Yeah, dog, I know. It's finally coming, all right. Circle them up! Circle them up tight!
It's too early to make camp. We're wasting time.
You feel that chill in the wind? That means it's just going to get harder and harder. And you can smell the rain heading this way, too.
Is that what that smell is? It's refreshing in a way.
You won't think so a little while when the skies open up. Get the wagons in a circle and the teams unhitched. Otherwise, them oxen are liable to be scattered hell west and crosswise by the time the storm's over.
By the time the wagons were drawn into a tight circle, teams unhitched and the oxen corralled in the middle of the circle, silver of the sky had turned dark blue. It was going to be as bad as Preacher had worried it might be.
Everybody inside the wagons. Make sure that anything that might blow away is tied down. And once storm hits, keep your head down. Preacher left horse in the center of the circle, knowing that the stallion wouldn't spook and run off no matter how bad the storm got. Then he and Dog crawled under the wagon where Jerome and Jake hunkered inside. Preacher stretched out on the ground while the big cur huddled against his side. Preacher put an arm around Dog's neck and dug his fingers into the thick coat.
Hang on, fella.
First, the rain came almost straight down, closing in around the wagons like a thick, gray curtain. Then, as the wind blew harder, it began to slant, until the drop seemed to be moving almost horizontally. The rain blew under the wagon and lashed the Preacher and Dog.
Good God, Dog! It's like being in a damn river!
The only good thing about a storm like this was that it usually didn't last very long. And this one moved quickly. And after a half hour or so that seemed much longer, the storm began to let up.
Oh, hell.
As Preacher peered through the spokes of one of the wheels, the rain thinned out enough for him to be able to see the writhing black funnel of a tornado as it danced across the prairie a few hundred yards away, darting this way and that, but always traveling in the general direction of the circled wagons. Preacher hated being helpless. That was exactly the way he felt when facing this terrible threat from nature. He slid back to where Dog lay with his head on his paws and wrapped his arms around the big cur again. By lifting his head, Preacher could still see the face of the tornado as it capered toward him, 100 yards away now. 50. A sudden swerve to the side as if the super destructive black column of air was going to miss him, then another swerve so that it was bearing down on him again. 20 yards away, roaring so loud now that it slammed against Preacher's ears like a physical blow, and the ground shook. Suddenly, the tornado lifted into the sky, passing a short distance above the wagons. The very capriciousness that had threatened Preacher and his companions had now saved them.
Oh, Lord, Lord, that was a close one.
Once the twister was gone, the rest of the storm followed hurriedly after it. The rain subsided to a drizzle, and the lightning moved well to the east. Preacher crawled out from under the wagon and looked around to see how bad the damage was. Amazingly, the wagons all seemed to be intact. The canvas covers hadn't been ripped off any of them. The oxen were soaked and miserable and a little wall-eyed, but they seemed to be all right too, as was horse.
Everybody all right? You can come out now. Storm's over.
Is anyone hurt? Corliss? Deborah?
We're just shaken up a little. I never saw such a storm in all my life. You were right, Preacher.
I just assumed I hadn't been, but we seem to have come through it with no harm done.
What was that horrible noise there at the end? I've never heard anything quite like that before. And it would be all right with me if I never heard it again.
That was a twister. Tornado or cyclone, some folks call them. I've seen a few in my time. They can flatten the sturdiest building if they hit it straight on.
Do they happen a lot out here?
Yeah, pretty often during the spring and summer.
I don't think we can travel as long as the ground's this muddy. The wagons would get stuck.
Yeah, more than likely. But it's late enough in the day we can just go ahead and make camp here for the night anyways. Have to be a cold camp, though. I don't reckon we'll find any buffalo chips dry enough to burn right now.
You mean we're going to be stuck here until the ground dries out?
Yeah, but that won't take too long. It might even be dry enough come morning. If it ain't, then it should be by day after tomorrow for sure.
I hope you're right. I hate to be delayed.
Well, you might as well take it easy and not worry about it. Getting a burr under your saddle over something you can't do a blame thing about will just angrify your blood.
Is that so? Well, I'll certainly pay heed to that bit of homespun wisdom.
They ate an early supper of cold beans left over from the midday meal. Then everyone turned in except for Preacher, who planned to stand the first turn on guard by himself. The thorough braces on one of the wagons creaked a little as the weight on them shifted. The noise was so slight that anyone with ears less keen than Preacher's might not have noticed it. But he heard it, and he turned his head to look as a figure climbed out one of the wagons and dropped silently to the ground. That was the wagon shared by Jake and Jerome. The fellow who had just climbed out was too big to be the boy, so that left Jerome.
Preacher figured he was probably just answering the call of nature, but since he couldn't be sure about that, he cat-footed along behind the figure as Jerome walked out onto the prairie, away from the wagons.
Damnation. He sure is going out a long way if all he wants to do is dig a hole and pee or some such.
Suddenly, Preacher heard somebody coming up behind him. He veered off to the side. Whoever it was didn't move as quietly as Jerome did. Preacher dropped to a knee and then flattened out on the ground and waited to see what the hell was going on here. The moon hadn't risen yet, but the starlight was enough for him to see the second person from the wagon train come up and join Jerome, who had stopped about 100 yards away from the vehicles. Preacher's jaw tightened as he watched the two of them embrace.
Thank God you weren't hurt during that storm this afternoon, darling. I don't think I could stand it if anything happened to you.
I feel the same way, Jerome.
Deborah moved closer to Jerome, and Preacher knew from the way their heads came together that they were kissing.
Well, hell's far.
The engine showed up the next morning. They sat on their ponies a dozen strong, about 200 yards away on the bank of the Platte River. Preacher was the first one awake, as usual. He spotted the engines as the sky began to turn gray, but since they were just sitting there, he didn't do anything about it. Not yet.
Best wait and see what they have in mind, dog.
Preacher hadn't said or done anything about the encounter he had witnessed the night before. Jerome and Deborah had hugged and sparked and talked quietly for a while, then slipped back to the wagon train separately. Preacher stayed where he was until they were safely in their wagons, then returned to the circle of covered vehicles himself. Preacher found some buffalo chips that had dried out enough overnight to burn, built a fire, and put the coffee on to boil. The engines would smell it, take it for a sign that he wasn't worried about their presence. That might help determine what they did next. Like animals, they'd be quicker to attack if they sensed fear or weakness. Preacher walked over to where Blackie slept under one of the wagons and nudged the man's foot with the toe of his moccasin.
We got company.
Blackie slid out from under the wagon, bringing his rifle with him, and he stood up.
Cheyenne or Arapaho?
I'm not sure. They ain't close enough yet to tell. Wake up the other drivers. I'll let Jerome and Corliss know. And we're going to go on about our business like the engines aren't there, except for making sure that there are rifles close at hand. Make sure everybody understands that. If anybody starts the ball, I don't want it to be one of us.
Got it.
Blackie moved off to follow Preacher's orders. Preacher went to the wagon shared by Jerome and Jake and stuck his head in the entrance flap at the rear of the vehicle.
Rise and shine. Indians have come to call.
Indians?
Engines? Did you say engines, Preacher?
Yeah, about a dozen of them sitting a couple of 100 yards away watching us.
Are they going to attack?
It's too soon to tell. Right now, they're just watching. Come on out of the wagons, but don't panic. They might just want to parley and then ride on. If they do, we'll have to give them some gifts. I reckon it'll be all right to break into the trade goods?
Yes, of course. Take whatever you need to placate them. The last thing we want to do is fight Indians.
Preacher backed away from the wagon and turned toward the one where Deborah slept, which was next in the circle. Corliss was already climbing out from under it, having been awakened by the men moving around.
What's wrong?
Preacher didn't say anything. He just raised his arm and pointed outside the circle of wagons.
Oh my God! Savages!
Well, you had to figure we'd run into them sooner or later. They do consider this their country, you know.
Corliss bent down and reached under the wagon for the rifle he had left there.
Are they going to attack?
It's a good question. I reckon we'll find that out after a while.
Damn it, how can you be so calm in a situation like this?
Well, because it won't do any good to run around like a chicken with its head cut off. We might as well go on with our breakfast.
How can you even think about eating at a time like this?
Because I ain't ate since supper last night. My belly's empty, that's how. You better wake Miss Morgan. Tell her to keep her wits about her. The steadier we all are, the better our chances are of coming through this alive. And nobody fires a shot till I give the word. You understand that, Corliss?
Yes, I suppose so. You must know what you're doing. But that doesn't mean I have to like it.
Ain't much about this situation that I like neither, believe you me.
By now, Jerome and Jake had climbed out of their wagon, and the other drivers were up and moving around, too. Preacher cooked breakfast, and still the engine sat out there. Everyone ate, but they did so with one eye on the mounted figures, who had remained motionless ever since Preacher had first seen them. They might have almost been statues if it weren't for the wind ruffling the long manes of the ponies and tugging at the feathers tied to strips of buckskin that were attached to the lances they carried. If their goal was to make the wagon train folks nervous, they were sure as hell succeeding. Preacher hunkered next to the fire, sipping the last of his coffee.
Preacher?
Looking up, Preacher saw that the one-eyed man, Blackie, was gazing toward the engines. Preacher turned his head and saw the same thing Blackie had just noticed. One of the engines was riding slowly toward the wagons. Preacher straightened to his feet. The others noticed what was going on.
What does this mean that only one of them is coming in?
It's a good thing. They want to talk.
Is that their chief?
Probably a sub-chief in charge of that hunting party. The big chief will be back at their village, wherever that is.
How do you know it's not a war party?
Because now that that fella's closer, I can see he ain't painted for war. He's Arapaho. I suspected as much from their lances, and now that I'm getting a better look at the beadwork on his shirt, I'm sure. Every tribe does things like that a mite different.
Are these Arapahoes hostile?
Oh yeah, they can be. But I figured this bunch was just out hunting and came across us. I ain't looking for trouble. As long as we keep our wits about us, there's a good chance they'll go on about their business. I'll go talk to them.
Is that safe?
His honor won't let him try anything tricky. He'd be shamed if he did.
Preacher stepped over a wagon tongue and walked toward the engine. His stride was calm and unhurried. When he was about a dozen feet from the mounted man, he stopped and moved his head in a curt nod.
I am antelope fleet as the wind.
I've heard of you. It is said that you're a brave and honorable warrior. I'm called Preacher.
The slayer who comes in the night? The confounder of the Blackfoot? Brother to the wolf?
I've been called all those things.
Why do you travel through the land of the Arapaho? Who are these white men with you?
They're my friends. We go to the Shining Mountains to trade with the human beings who live there, and with other whites who'll come as well in wagons like those.
There are no human beings in the Shining Mountains. Human beings live on the plains. And if more white men come in wagons like those, we will stop them and burn them. So the white men will know this is the land of the Arapaho and will not come back.
We are not the enemy of the Arapaho. We'll not trouble you or interfere with your hunting. We wish only to travel on to our destination in peace.
The Arapaho are a fierce, warlike people, much to be feared.
This I know.
But we do not fight those who do not seek to fight us. You and the other white men may go in peace, Preacher, if you will tell those you encounter about the honor and courage of the Arapaho.
Of course I will.
And if you give us each a rifle and powder and shot for them.
We'll give you 2 rifles, 1 horn of powder, and a pouch of shot.
10 rifles.
4. 8. 6. 6.
I have 12 men.
And half of them will have rifles. You can arm the other half some other time.
6 horns of powder.
3.
They settled on 4, along with a commensurate amount of ammunition. That ended that part of the negotiation. Now they just had to agree on the details of delivery.
We'll leave the rifles, powder, and shot here where we're camped. You and your men can get them after we leave.
This is good.
And each of us will go our own way in peace.
There will be no fight today.
Antelope fleet as the wind turned his pony and rode back toward the other warriors. Preacher swung around and strode back toward the wagon. Neither man worried about any trickery on the part of the other. Corliss, Jerome, and Jake all wore anxious expressions when they met Preacher as he got back to the wagons.
What did he say? Are they going to attack us?
Not today.
Not today? What does that mean?
Just what I said. They're going to go on their way, and we're going to go on ours. All we have to do is leave behind 6 rifles and some powder and some shot for them.
6 rifles? You're arming those savages?
In case you ain't noticed, they're already armed. They got lances and bows and arrows. If they just wanted to kill us, they could have probably managed to get it done with what they got. And there's a good chance none of them can shoot a rifle worth a damn anyway. They ain't had enough practice.
Then why do they want the guns?
For the buffalo, so they can hunt them without having to get right amongst the shaggy critters and risk getting trampled or gored. There's a lot of ritual involved in the way they hunt buffalo, so they won't give it up entirely, but they're practical folks, too. Like I said, they ain't had much practice with firearms, so they'll use them on the buffalo first and get good with them, and then they'll come after the traders and immigrants and settlers.
Well, I hope you're proud of yourself. You put the means of killing white people in the hands of those red savages.
What I've done is saved our hair right here now. I'll be satisfied with that for the time being. Now let's get them teams hitched up. Ground's dry enough for the wagons to roll this morning, so roll they will.
The party led by Colin Fairfax and Skylar Mims had stayed a good 5 to 10 miles behind the other group ever since leaving St. Louis. Fairfax was careful to the point of obsession. He didn't want Preacher to know they were behind him. With that in mind, Fairfax sent Skylar ahead to scout out Preacher and the wagon train's exact location. Skylar was nervous. Even if the wagons were able to travel, the ground was still wet enough so that the vehicle's wheels and the hooves of the oxen wouldn't raise any dust. That meant Skylar would have to actually come within sight of the expedition to find out if it was on the move again. If he could see the wagons, that meant the people with the wagon train could see him. The Preacher struck Skylar as the sort of fellow who would keep a close eye on his back trail. Skylar pushed on as the sun climbed higher in the sky, and after a while he spotted some dark shapes on the horizon. They were not the wagons. The light-colored canvas covers over the backs of the wagons were easy to distinguish, even at a distance. A moment later, he realized he was looking at riders, a good-sized group of them, and they were coming toward him. Instantly, he reined in. Skylar took the spyglass from his pocket and pulled it out to its full extension, then lifted it to his eye and squinted through the lens. What he saw made his blood turn cold. A dozen or more engines were riding straight toward him. They were at least a half a mile away, and he didn't know if they had seen him or not. He was just one man, which made him more difficult to spot than a group of riders. For a second, he thought about trying to find some place to hide while the savages rode past, but a swift glance around told him there was no place on this trackless prairie that would offer enough concealment. The engines were coming on faster now, too, urging their ponies to a gallop.
Oh, shit! They must have seen me.
Mims didn't have much experience with engines, but he knew from stories he'd heard that they couldn't resist the temptation to attack when they came across a lone white man. Skylar leapt into the saddle without even taking the time to put away the spyglass.
Yeah.
As swift as Skylar's horse was, the engine ponies were faster. On they came, and every time he looked back over his shoulder, wide-eyed with terror, they seemed to be closer. It wasn't just his imagination, he decided. They really were gaining on him.
Jesus Christ!
Mims thought it was bad enough that these plains were populated by such fearsome creatures. The idea that they possessed firearms, too, was even worse. It seemed to him that he should have gotten back to Fairfax and the others by now. His blood turned icy again as he wondered if he had somehow veered off of his original path enough so that he was going to miss the rest of his party and have to deal with the engines by himself. He put up a fight, of course, but it wouldn't last long, outnumbered as he was by at least 12 to 1. Then he realized that it wasn't possible he had gone astray. The broad, muddy expanse of the Platte River was still over there on its left now, shining in the sun about 100 yards away. As long as he could stay ahead of the engines, he was bound to run into Fairfax and the others sooner or later. As he looked back again, he saw that the pursuers were now less than a quarter of a mile behind. They had cut his lead by more than half. The mount was beginning to falter a little. The horse couldn't keep up the breakneck pace for much longer. Suddenly, Skylar spotted riders ahead of him. An even more frightening possibility occurred to him. What if more engines had gotten ahead of him somehow, cutting him off from the rest of his group? If that was the case, he was well and truly doomed. But within minutes, he could tell that the other riders were Fairfax and the rest of Shad Beaumont's men. He recognized the buckskins, the coonskin caps, the rough work clothes, the broad-brimmed frontiersman's hats.
Engines! Engines!
Fairfax and the others either saw the engines or figured out from Skylar's actions that something was wrong, because they started spreading out in preparation to do battle. They galloped forward, helping to cut down the distance between them and Skylar. As he clung to the back of his racing horse, he almost wept with relief at the sight of his companions. Moments later, Skyler reined in as Fairfax and the other men rode past him. They opened up on the engines. Skyler wheeled his horse to watch. The white men were better shots. A couple of the savages were hit and tumbled off their ponies. The others must have realized they had gotten themselves into a hell of a lot more trouble than they had expected when they started chasing Skyler. The group of riders broke apart as the engines turned to flee.
Kill them! Kill all the savage bastards!
Only two, maybe three of the savages got away, Skyler estimated. He figured they'd think twice before they attacked another white man they found riding alone. Fairfax and the rest of Beaumont's men rode back to join Skyler.
Thanks, Colin. I'm lucky I didn't get farther away from you fellas before those damn Redskins jumped me.
You led them right back to us. What if there had been more of them?
What was I supposed to do? I couldn't fight all of them.
So you'd have gotten us killed to save your own hide?
I could see there was only a dozen or so of them. I knew you and the rest of the boys wouldn't have any trouble handling them.
We heard shots. That's why we started in this direction. I was afraid you might have run into trouble.
Yeah, a few of them had rifles, but they didn't seem to be very good shots.
Some of us could have gotten killed, even if it was by accident.
Well, damn it, if I hadn't lit a shuck out of there, I'd have gotten killed. Starting to sound like you'd rather that's what I done.
No. You misunderstand, Skyler. Of course you did the right thing by saving your own life. I just don't want anything to interfere with this mission we're on for Beaumont. I lost my head for a second, that's all.
Well, that's fine, I reckon. I don't want to let Beaumont down, neither. If we do a good job for him on this, he'll keep on working with us.
Did you see whether or not that wagon train had started out before you encountered the savages?
Hell, I never even saw the wagons before those engines started chasing me. I don't know any more about that than I did when I left. Sorry.
There was nothing else you could do. Of course, if the wagons didn't push on this morning, they're probably close enough so that Preacher and the others heard the shooting.
That's liable to make them more watchful than ever. Knowing somebody's behind him.
Well, there's nothing we can do about it now. Go on and see how far ahead they are.
You mean you still want me to do that?
Someone has to. You've had more experience on the frontier than any of the rest of us.
A farm in Ohio ain't really the frontier. Oh, hell! Yeah, I'll give it another try. Sure hope I don't run into any more Redskins, though.
That goes without saying.
I better swap horses with one of the other men. I had to run this one pretty hard to get away from those engines. If I come across any more, I'll need a fresher horse.
It didn't occur to Skyler at the time that it sure probably would have been better in the long run if they'd have managed to kill all of those engines. The wagons had just gone about a mile when Preacher suddenly reined in at his position in front and turned his head toward the rear.
What the hell?
If Preacher had ears like dog or horse, they would have pricked forward quizzically at that moment as he tried to decide whether or not he had just heard shots coming from somewhere behind them. The sounds had been faint and a breeze had sprung up, making it even more difficult to hear. But if those were gunshots, they were several miles away back to the east. Preacher's gut told him that trouble was dogging their trail. He waved the wagons forward and rode out to the side, turning horse so that he could stare back at where they'd been. His keen eyes searched the mostly flat landscape for a long time without seeing anything unusual. Nor did he hear any more shots after that brief flurry. Finally, he rode after the wagon, drawing rein and bringing horse to a walk as he came alongside the wagon driven by Jerome Hart.
What's wrong, Preacher?
Thought I heard some shots from back yonder somewheres. Didn't see nothing suspicious, though.
Do you think we're being followed?
It was no secret back in St. Louis that you were coming out here with six wagons full of trade goods. Some men who ain't no better than they have to be would take that as a mighty tempting target.
Yes, I can see where they would. But wouldn't they have attempted to steal our goods before now?
Well, maybe and maybe not. It depends on what they're planning on doing with them. As long as you're hauling this stuff to the mountains, they might figure to let you go ahead, thinking they can ambush the wagons when you get there.
Do you think that's possible?
There's a good reason I keep my eyes peeled for trouble. For now, though, nobody's chasing us. Leastways, not that I can see, so we might as well keep on pushing west.
All right. But I think I understand now why it's so important that we stand guard at night.
Preacher didn't say anything to that. He thought Jerome should have figured that one out a long time before now. Skyler didn't run into any more engines or any other sort of trouble. He found the spot where the wagon train had been camped the night before, though. It was easy to tell that was what it was because of the concentration of droppings from the oxen. Also, the wheel ruts leading west were deeper than the ones coming in because the ground was softer this morning after the storm of the day before. Skyler turned and rode back to rejoin Fairfax and the rest of the group, arriving at the place where they waited around midday.
Safe to go off. They're heading west again, still following the river.
All right. We'll hang back the way we've been doing. Another week or so and they'll reach the mountains. That's when we'll jump them. There in the foothills.